The title of the book was a game of words, because you could have two meanings, and these two meanings, in my view, represent two possible futures of Tibet. Last cry would be an agony of a land losing its culture. That is a claim of the exiles. And on that, I can follow them. I agree partly with them that Tibet is now at a crossroad with a true risk and danger of losing its identity. If Tibet can reconcile its two populations, now Tibet has maybe 40% of Han Chinese, the rest is Tibetans, but also a lot of other small ethnies. There are frictions, they are normal. They will settle in a couple of generations, and something new will happen. I saw it in the in nightclubs, for example, of Lhasa. We saw the table of Han Chinese, and next table was Tibetans. The young people, they are at the same place, having fun at the same place. Not together, not yet, but they are on the way. The future, to me, means the last cry is meaning the high fashion is something that people would like to discover.
You were able to go inside Tibet and have a look around. What is actually happening with the culture in Tibet? A lot of people online are very alarmist, saying that the culture is being crushed. What is the real state of Tibet today?
When you see the plateau of Tibet, you see a huge space of grass. And 50 years ago, 80% of the population was traveling with their herds of yaks, of sheep and goats. And they were traveling hundreds or thousands of kilometers throughout this plateau, grassing and feeding their herds, their animals. As I was in Tibet, these 80% had dwindled down to 5%. And this happened in two generations. That is the real problem. My assumption, which is corroborated by experts, is that this would have happened anyway. It had to happen, China or not, because modern time needs schools, needs hospitals, and need to settle. And these people have settled. They have done it very rapidly. This brings about a cultural problem between kids and parents. Kids want blue jeans, which I have seen a lot. They want a mobile phone. I've seen a lot. They want on Saturday evening to go to the nightclub, the dancing. And this I have seen as well. And the parents tend to wear more traditional dress and to be still on their horses. So the loss of a lifestyle, which made them very poor, but rich in emotions and rich in events. Now they have to go to offices. They will have to conform themselves to city life. And this in two generations. There are also other problems which are political, which cannot be denied. There is a very, very strong army there, and this army is very intolerant against any kind of lack of submission. Also, religiously speaking, the Dalai Lama is a very important figure which is revered and respected and is considered as by the Chinese as a wolf in a robe, and they don't want to talk with him, and in my view, this is a mistake. I want to stress the marvel of Tibet, the light of Tibet, this blue light. It's unique in the world. It's absolutely a place that should be visited.
There has been some criticism I've seen among Tibetan groups outside of tourists going into Tibet, and they're basically saying that they're supporting Beijing's view of what Tibet should be rather than what Tibet actually is. Is there anything really that tourists should be wary of going into the region?
In my view, this kind of idea is called war and is not helpful. In Lhasa, the governor and the party secretary of Lhasa, they don't like too much to see foreigners coming in. The people of Lhasa, they would like to see you in, that's for sure. People coming in to support or not support China, I think they want to discover land. The land does not belong to China. It does not belong to the Dalai Lama or to the exiles. It belongs to Tibet itself, and it belongs to the world. It's part of us. It's simply beautiful. Foreign tourism are more or less accepted, especially if they come from outside, from Nepal. China is trying to develop a form of tourism in Tibet and make of tourism the idea is good in itself, to make of Tibet a showcase, a beautiful place which it is already, to not spoil it and to open it to tourism, to a tourism of quality, a tourism of intellectual people, of people who want to think and who want to have experience. This is obviously a reasonable thing to do.
As the saying goes, a picture is worth a thousand words, and your book is filled with some really wonderful black and white photographs from Tibet. Tell our audience a little bit about these photographs.
I wish Laurent Zilberman, the photographer, was with us to talk about them, because he is the proud author of these marvelous pictures. He had an extremely strong, heavy, and sophisticated camera, which he would be able to handle from any position, lying on the floor or getting on the top of a mountain or whatever. And the final product would come in color. Then he would switch to black and white. And then he would work on each photograph a couple of hours in his lab to enhance the effects that he wanted to produce. He explained to me why he felt that the black and white was better than the color, simply because there is so much color and so much light here that it gives an exceptional quality of vision, which only can be translated into black and white. Symbolically, also refers to the Manichaeist vision of God, good and bad, of moral values, which is so important in Tibet.